Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
I realize now I am my own chef, and if I'm an asshole, I'm not going to have a lot of people wanting to work for me.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. My guest with me today is Chef Franck Desplechin, a classically trained chef who grew up in France, started his apprenticeship at 15, and went on to work in Michelin-starred restaurants, luxury hotels, and resorts around the world. He has 25 years in kitchens and boardrooms. Franck developed a leadership philosophy that blends precision, mentorship, and humility. After transitioning into consulting and his company, Incrementum, he now coaches organizations on culture, growth, and resilience. He also is the author of Relentless Growth, Cultivating a Chef's Mindset for Professional Fulfillment. That's coming out on October 14th. It's a book that's part memoir, part blueprint, and part call of action to anyone striving to grow without burning out. So Chef Franck, thanks so much for taking the time to jump on and have a conversation today.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Very excited about this episode.
Yeah, so a lot of previous podcasts have been promoting your book, and I imagine you've answered a lot of these questions over and over. So for listeners not in hospitality at all, can you take us past the tagline? What does relentless growth really mean to you in practice, and why does it matter not just inside the kitchen, but outside the kitchen?
I that's a very good question. I believe the relentless growth is something that has to do with your mindset. And while I have decided to speak in a field that I know of, I am strongly believe that the mindset that I am kind of presenting slash suggesting for people to adopt can be applicable in any industry. So I try to stay true to who I am and what I have done, because I didn't want it to sound like I have the secret sauce and the recipe for success. I like to think that people of hospitality, especially today, who are still struggling to find their own way and still going through their own adversities and challenging way. I found myself being able to play a role when I think I can help. I've been able to help physically, emotionally, and I was very present with a lot of people that got the opportunity to work under me. So I just felt that maybe I can try to touch the next student of hospitality that are currently in school right now. They're just starting hospitality and they want to make it a career. So I really wanted to transpire to hospitality first, but if it bleeds over and beyond hospitality, then that's just gravy.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of applications that happen in the food industry, principles, if you will, that blend into so many other different aspects because of the culture that we go through, because of some of the training, the rigorousness. I think it all, if you take those same principles and apply it to almost any other business area, I think you could have a lot of success because of kind of our grit and our grind, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. It's you don't know that while you're going through it. You just kind of, you know, you don't know any better. You're just going through hospitality thinking that's the way to go. But now with the evolution of social media and the access to information, you're starting to see how much hospitality can actually be utilized, and the rules and the workplace culture can be utilized in other industry.
Yeah. So, you know, the mindset clearly comes from somewhere. So let's rewind before, you know, the book, the Michelin stars, and kind of go back to that childhood. You know, you talk about your parents and how meals in France really shaped you. You know, what I'd love to know kind of is beyond the cooking itself, those family meals, what did it teach you about leadership, belonging, bringing people together? And how does that show up in your leadership today?
I would say that if I remember right, those meals did not necessarily, at the time at least, did not necessarily teach me anything related to leadership. That was a concept that was completely unknown to me. That was just something I didn't even grasp at the time. I was way too young and probably too innocent to really see beyond that. What I remember though was, I guess as I move forward in my journey, I started to connect the dot backwards. I started to see and I say, oh, wow, if I did not experience this, then maybe I would not have been able to see this way. And I guess the influence of both my parents, to give you an example, like my mom, both of them are amazing cook. My mom was very much only comfort food is the veal blanket, is the beef bourguignon, it's the crepes. It's going to be just the comfort food you would find in the bistro restaurant in France. And that some people are trying to translate that in the United States. So I think anyone can relate to that kind of food. Now, my dad was just cooking more on holidays and special occasion. My dad was a risk taker. He was going into the recipe book and he said, oh, I've never done that before. And let me go grab some scallops and let me go grab some oysters. Let me go grab some foie gras. And then let's just start to make something. And my mom, for example, to give you the most distinct example and difference is my mom was putting the pot in the middle of the table and we're all helping ourselves to eat. My dad was plating up every single dish and then sending it to us during the holidays. So I really kind of see both ways on how kitchen and cuisine could bring people. The most common aspect is everyone was around the table and we're always raving about the food and the company that we're around, regardless of the level of sophistication and elegance you were bringing on it. So I guess I would say that those are the two main things that are influenced me. And as I move on through my career, I just realized that family meal, when we call family meal, like making a meal for the staff versus making a meal for the guest, was actually not that different. You actually have to put the same amount of skills, the same amount of passion, and the same amount of attention into both meal in order to please the next person that's going to consume it. So that would say throughout my leadership, if I were to translate it to leadership, I have took that same approach. It did not matter if I was coaching and mentoring a dishwasher in order to understand how to properly clean the dishes versus a prep cook versus a chef. I've adopted the same across the industry.
Yeah, maybe give a real quick on what family meal actually is in a restaurant for those that haven't seen that side of it or been in an actual restaurant in which you have family meal.
Of course, family meal is most commonly known as a cafeteria, or you're just kind of cooking for the staff. Some bigger property will have a space within the hotel or within the restaurant when you go and you just kind of everyone takes their lunch break and go and you know, break bread and just kind of eat the meal. And then over time, because I have worked in very small places, remote places with a limited amount of staff, that transformed very quickly to family meal because you spend more time with your coworkers than you spend it at home. So the word family meal ended up becoming the term used in order to just say, okay, guys, we have a 14-hour shift today. We're going to get smacked at least twice during lunch and dinner and say, let's at least have a half an hour when we get to spend time together, enjoy each other's company. And usually what I have imposed over the years as a chef is, everyone get a chance to do meal, family meal. So everyone's get a chance to shine. And since I came in the United States, I'm obviously exposed to a lot of different culture. I've got Indian culture. I've got to have African culture. I'm going to have people coming from Latin America. And so sometimes the family meal make you travel the world a little bit. So I've kind of always implemented that and making sure there's as much appreciation as there's recognition.
Yeah. And it also gives a lot of cooks the opportunity to kind of shine, show what they can do when they maybe normally don't get to as well, and use a lot of ingredients or pieces that, you know, aren't going out for the main entree because it's a little bit of scrap of this or a little bit of that. I mean, there may be some leftover main protein or whatever it is, but I think it's also, at least for me, it was a way to kind of be able to show the chefs, especially when I was on the lower rungs, like, hey, I got some chops too, and I've got some creativity. So it always kept you on your feet as well. And then just the feeling of cooking for all those people, right? I think a lot of us get into it because of the feeling we get when we see a guest's face light up, when we see the experience that they're having. And to do that same for your teammates or your family, because as you said, you are with them more than you see your regular family when it's 12, 14, 15 hours a day, and it's turn and burn, and you go to sleep and you wake up and you do the same thing over and over. So you're spot on with that. So I want to say, you know, you spent time in Michelin kitchens, luxury hotels, a lot of pressure, a lot of standards, ton of prestige. But I want to know about some of the moments that didn't go right. You know, what are some of those times or a time in those environments where you really failed or got humbled, and how that experience reshaped your philosophy as a leader?
I would say, I mean, there's quite a few of them. There's one I describe in my book, and I don't want to tease the book already. So I'm going to try to find another example, and so I keep the reader intact. I would say that quite a few actually. When I arrived, I was probably about 19 years old. There was a moment when I was someone that was impatient at the time. We're 19, we kind of know exactly what we want at the time. At least I knew what I wanted. And then I got a little bit rejected. I was planning on going into a very nice restaurant, and the restaurant says, sorry, I cannot take you for another 3 months. And I said, my goodness, I don't have it 3 months. Like, I was ready to go now. And so I decided to, because of my impatience and probably a little bit of a bruised ego, I decided to just say, you know what, I'm going to quit here and I'm going to figure things out. While I was, full of my intention, after 3 days, this whole intention like fell flat. And I just said, man, what the hell did I do? I just, that's not something I should have done. And that humbled me a little bit. And so I decided to go into a restaurant in the Alps. So it's kind of near the Switzerland border. And so the restaurant was nothing to do with Michelin star, nothing to do with luxury, but that's just the job that I could find. And so I found that job, did that, and I hated every minute of this job. I just did not feel like I belonged. I did not feel like I was in the right spot. I felt like I was wasting my time because I was not in the Michelin star world, which I had devoted and committed to. But I was trying to find a lesson into it. I had obviously made an erratic decision by just quitting my job because I didn't get what I wanted. The last thing I wanted is to create a pattern that now suddenly I don't feel great where I'm at, so I'm going to quit too. I just didn't feel great about myself to go into that second within 8 months quitting two jobs because I just didn't feel right. So I've decided to stick it through and trying to find a lesson into this, and realize very quickly over time as my career went on that the failure or the setbacks or the challenges in front of you, if you're really looking into it, you will realize that they don't have to be associated negatively with the word failure. They're just something you say, you know what? Actually, now that I've worked in this Italian restaurant, I can tell you, Jeff, I've learned over time, because I was the only French in the kitchen of Italians, I've learned how to do pretty good kick-ass Italian food. And like I said, there's a story between Italian and French. You know, the soccer did not help to make the rivalry so great.
Yeah.
But I came with so much arrogance into this kitchen, thinking that I have done this, I've done that, I'm the best. And very quickly they just humbled me because I didn't know nothing about Italian food, not nearly as much as they knew. And so as time went by, I realized now anytime that I went somewhere and we were adding Italian meals or Italian dishes into my menu, that I just was picking up recipe from what I learned in that Italian restaurant from a very old Italian chef and apply them here. And so I realized that I would have never been able to do that good of an Italian food if I did not stick it through and I had just quit. So those are some of the example. I don't really recognize failure for what they are. I just recognize setbacks, challenges, obstacles, but they're usually, I'm going to look more into the lesson I need to extract from it.
Yes, I love that mindset. And because you've hinted on lessons, and how quickly does it take you to kind of connect the dots of that lesson? What's your kind of reflection period? I've kind of gone through the same thing, as I've looked at some things and said, man, that was a total failure. But it took, you know, probably 2, 3, even 4, some of them are 5 years later, that I realized I actually learned a really valuable lesson. You know, just for example, in my first actual kitchen that I got a chance in, I thought I was hot shit, you know, could do no harm. I was the workhorse of the kitchen. and just had an arrogancy about me, not confidence. It was just arrogance. And I had a chef pull me down to the kitchen and he goes, you need to cut it. And he goes, no one's going to be as smart as you, work like you and act like you. So you need to get your attitude in check. And at the time I was furious. I was pissed off. I was like, who is he to tell me who I am? And I do everything. But I look back now, and that was now 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was probably one of the best lessons that I was ever taught, was to keep your ego in check. You can have confidence, but keep your ego in check versus just strutting around. So what's your kind of time frame on learning these lessons? Is it you try to look after something that, again, you're not deeming as a failure, but what, again, I guess maybe just what is that time frame and what is your process at figuring out what the lesson is?
I don't know if I have an exact answer for this. I have to say that I am someone that is impatient, but I'm also patient at the same time. I'm patient for anything that is meaningful, and I'm impatient for things that I can just get right now. And so you combine this with an obsessive approach to commitment. I am someone that commitment is one of my highest value. Therefore, because of my commitment and my patience, when I was going through this process of learning through my setback, I just did not feel like I learned a lesson. To your point, only years later, you say, "Oh man, I realized. Lucky me that I stick around for this, because now I realize this." And so I'm just now, it's almost like my process is so long that I almost dismiss it right now in the moment. And then a year later, it just hit me again, because I'm either facing the same situation and I'm just like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I actually need to approach this different. I had a similar profile as you did. I was someone that was very arrogant, someone that was unapologetically feeling better than everybody in any kitchen that I was walking to. And I really believed that I was. And so that was making me just unapproachable. It was making me, the chefs were just kind of depending and counting on me for VIP tables and stuff like that, because they knew the work will be top notch. But at the same time, they were not necessarily giving me initiative when it comes to lead a project, because the team might not, they just cannot handle me, or they just say, Frank, you're just an asshole. And so all those things, it over time, I realized, and it's like, okay, I realize now I am my own chef. And if I'm an asshole, I'm not going to have a lot of people wanting to work for me. And so all those things made me realize, I say, okay, so now those three chefs I work for, they warned me 10 years ago. They warned me about how much of an ass I was. And now I realize that they actually were right, because now I need the team and I need to humble myself and I need to pay attention to things. So I don't know if there is a conscious process for me that happens. I think this is more about memories, a little bit of PTSD, and I guess having a strong desire to be a better version of myself as I move on through life.
Yes, love it. Yeah, I think we all have a little PTSD from the kitchen in one way, shape, or form. But mine's the chit going off. I feel like I hear that in my dreams sometimes.
Oh, yes,
of it
just
mm-hmm. ticking off. I think previously in one of them, an episode or a previous interview, you were laid off. And you had a pretty vulnerable time. So you doubled down, correct, and started Incrementum. Maybe talk a little bit about what that process was like, what skills you discovered, and why double down versus just going back to the kitchen.
That's great. During the pandemic, the whole world went on standby. Obviously, the industry was shattered. The whole world was shattered. Nobody knew what was happening, what was about to happen. So I am someone that doesn't know still to this day how to stand still. I just don't know. Maybe I'm afraid of silence. Maybe I just don't know how to handle my own thought. Maybe there's a little bit of everything. But the reality is I don't know how to stand still. I always need to feel like I'm moving forward. So now obviously a pandemic that never happened in my lifetime. So that was just novelty for anyone to just say, what else? What's next? And so I've decided when I was talking to my my chefs or former colleagues or people that became friends over time and realized that they were the one who actually made me realize face on that I had a message to share with them, something that connected and related to them. And so I just say, maybe I need to get into the world of coaching and mentoring. And while the, like I said, while the industry was on standby, so this is the perfect opportunity. I'm going to go and look into this. And so I've looked into a certification program to become a business coach, speaker, and trainer. And the one I related the most with based on, like I say, values, content, and books that I had read, because I only read self-help book, and John Maxwell came up on the top. Yes. And so I've related very much into a lot. I've read a lot of his books. So I decided to take on. I reached out online. I got a phone call the next day and went into an interview process. And then they just said, Frank, we would love to have you going part of the certification program. And so I led with that. The reason of doing this and building Incrementum is there's another spark that happened. One is the staff and my chefs made me realize that I had something to offer beyond just what I was doing today through the kitchen. The other part is I had just met now my wife, and she was not pregnant at the time, but we were talking about founding a family. And we all know how having a family and being a chef is extremely hard to be compatible. Yeah. So as I was talking to friends and people that had a family and was working alongside me, every time I was asking, well, what does it look like for you? Like, what does it look like for you to be able to balance both? And they say, I can't. Most of the answers that we just can't. That's just, and it's hard. And so I just, man, I need to figure something out. Like, how can I defy the odds by creating an environment where I can be there for my family as much as they need me to, and at the same time, not necessarily having to give up on my career that I've worked so hard for. And so Incrementum was my way. I say, you know what? There's going to be a time when I'm going to be tired of just working 16-hour shift. And the hostess called out, therefore I'm at the host end, and the food runner called out, then I'm at the food. Like all those things, I just said, there's going to be a time I'm going to be tired of this. So I wanted to take the time to establish a future self and a future me. Then when it's time for me to pick it up, then I can fall back on my plan B. And so that's where Incrementum was born, was really kind of I have time. I'm still passionate about what I do. I still love what I do. I'm probably a little psycho, but I love it. And so Incrementum was built in order to create this much later on in my career. I certified, I created the company, I built the website. The foundation was there and will not move until I'm ready to pick it up. And obviously 2023 happened that ended up fast forwarding a lot of things that made me dusting off Incrementum and launching it full entrepreneurship. And it's a decision that I wish I had done earlier, I guess.
Yeah. What advice do you give to a young cook or someone aspiring about mentorship, about finding someone to latch on to and learn from?
I would say the advice to give is all feedbacks are great feedback. Regardless of, just pay attention to the feedback and what it means rather than looking at what it means just for you. It's just take the feedback. Understand that there is many ways to get to the top. There's some that are longer, there's some that are shorter. But at the end of the day, when you get to the top is if I'm talking for chefs, for example, is what kind of executive chef do you want to be? If you can answer that question now and every time you move forward in the ladder of success, decide for yourself what kind of executive chef you want to be. Have a vision of where you want to be. How do you want to show up in 10 years from now when you're at work? What kind of team do you want to manage? What kind of team do you want to hire? You want to hire them for attitude? You want to hire them for soft skills, for hard skills? Like, what kind of chef do you want to be? Or what kind of leader do you want to be? And I think as you continue to ask yourself so many times throughout your career, and it can be up to every quarter, anytime you're going to look for a new job and say, you know what, I've done my time here. I'm going to look for a new opportunity for me. And it's like, okay, well, what kind of leader do I want to be? Is it the right opportunity for me? Or am I going there because now they're offering me $100,000 a year? I say, maybe I should take the 85 because this environment looks like it can actually flourish. Mm-hmm. The money will come. It will come over time. It's a guarantee. It's designed for this. But you got to make sure that when you get to the top, then you have not reached the top. You can continue to go up. Because the when you get to you on top and kind of what you see as your ceiling for yourself, there's going to be someone above that that's going to see a ceiling even higher for you if you've done the right thing.
Yes, don't chase money. It will chase you. If you just strive to be the best and do what you want to do, money will come.
Of course.
And it's a hard lesson, especially when you're younger. You want to chase everything, stars and prestige and money and fame per se. But if you kind of can set that aside long enough to actually focus on what matters, the daily grind, everything you want will come. It really will. And I'm a big believer too of speaking the truth of what you want, and things will come as you speak it into existence, because then it becomes almost a subconscious thought that you don't know you're telling yourself that, but you are, and you're striving towards that.
I agree.
So you've got so many of these lessons, but now, you know, they're on paper, and not just for your clients, but now with your book coming out, Relentless mm-hmm. Growth, you know, so a lot of chef books, you know, they end up being just memoirs, or I hate to say it, coffee table pieces. It's mm-hmm. they put out a book with all their recipes and all their war stories. What was the inspiration to actually, one, write a book? And if someone was trying to take a lesson from that book, what would it be?
I think the approach to this book is, I would say that I felt ready for it. There's a level of readiness. I have been thinking, my wife wrote a book during the pandemic, and I've watched her going through that process, and it was inspiring. And as I kind of move on into my career and starting, obviously, I've been in US for about 12 years, so my English was good enough to write a book in English. At the same time, I just felt ready. I felt like I had a message that I was able to articulate. Mm. I still had fuzzy ideas in my head. It's like, what am I writing a book about? Am I writing a book about this? Am I writing a book about that? Is it a memoir? Is it a self-help book? And then because I didn't know how to find those answers, I just hired a book coach. And I was not afraid to hire a book coach and just say, hey, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. I have a ton of the ideas. I'm just going to unload everything and put everything on the table if you can help me figure this out. And her name is Sabrina, and she's amazing. And she helped me dissecting every part of it and say, Frank, I think you got something here. And then you get into this phase of just saying, okay, now we find a topic. Am I going to have enough to say for 240 pages of that same topic? You're just kind of wondering. You go through the imposter syndrome, figure it out if you know, why am I the one writing a book? You go to that exercise. And the first question, as I'm going to my book coach, you just say, Frank, why do you think you're the right person to write this book? And I say, oh, wow, that's a great question. I'm going to need some time on this. And then you just have to write it down. Why do you think the right person? What have you done in order for people to want to listen to what you have to say? So I read a lot of self-help book. Now I have an idea. I know what I want to write about. But I was so intentional about so many things about this book that I became obsessed with it. I probably drove my book coach crazy because she was giving me feedback, saying, well, what about this? And what about that? And what about this word? And maybe this word should be here. Like, I was just very, 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 detailed with a lot of precision and intentionality into what I wanted to do. And so as I was reading books, because there's an exercise with my book coach, was you have to approach writing your book with everyone think that they're writing the book that's never been written before. Obviously, everyone does this. But she actually approached it from a different angle. I said, Frank, that cannot be the case because it's not the case. There's plenty of book that's been written now. Now, if I were to put your book on the shelf with five other books, what would your book add to the conversation? that hasn't been said yet. And so that's the way I approached it. It's really like I looked into five competitive titles, very different. They did not necessarily have to do anything with hospitality for some of them. And just looking, what am I extracting from this? And it's like, you know what? I really like this from this book. I wish I can translate this a little bit in mine, but I also think this book is missing this, and I'm going to make sure I hit the note on mine. So I guess those five books, those five competitive titles have helped me defining what kind of book I want to write, because it hasn't been written before and I'm adding into the conversation of those books. So I hope that answers your question as far as the approach that I've taken.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's big picture, you know, because growth, it can sound inspiring, but it can also sound exhausting. People could say, you know, growth, it can be this time consuming thing and I don't want to do it, you know, at the same time being inspiring, you know. So with that phrase, relentless growth, right? Mm-hmm. You're always pushing. How do you personally recognize when growth is tipping into burnout? Because in our industry, that happens way too much. And what is that fine line?
I guess we have to be able to differentiate growth, progress, movement. All those things are very similar word, but at the same time is you don't necessarily need to grow in a way of, when I use the word relentless, it can definitely translate into I never stop growing. And it sounds almost like you're growing at a fast pace, but it doesn't have to be at a fast pace. It's just the mindset is for you to wake up today knowing that you're going to do things a little bit better than you did yesterday. If yesterday, for example, let's say that you're tired, you're close to burnout, you've overwhelmed, you're stressed out, you have anxiety, recognizing that those feelings are actually real to you. A lot of the chefs, me included, for a long time, I am someone that doesn't stress. I'm someone that doesn't have anxiety. I'm a chef that just is super composed, calm, under pressure. But the reality is we all have stress. We're all going through our own thing. We just choose not to show it. But acknowledging those feelings that are very much real may you actually realizing that you stress because of one of the cooks that showed up late, even though you had a conversation with him yesterday, that adding you stress, you realize that if that server came and say, hey, I have an allergy for this, that you snapped at that server, you realize that that server didn't do anything wrong. It's you stress that you refuse to acknowledge that actually was the trigger for you to lash out on a server that did not deserve it. So realizing this as you grow is I'm going to wake up today is like, what is it that I did yesterday that was great? And what is it that I did yesterday that could have done better? And this choosing, making a conscious decision to actually do things better. And that day, you know what? I'm going to go and chat with that server and I'm going to apologize. Which is very hard for a chef to do, especially from the years I'm coming from in the early 2000s. You don't apologize. You're just the way it is. The chef has to be almost as feared as he has to be respected. And so I've learned over time that is like, man, I don't want that service to be afraid to come in the kitchen anytime there's an allergy. That is just so against the culture of the workplace we want to create. And so you go the next day and the growth that you approach is, I'm going to go see that server and I'm going to apologize for my behavior yesterday. And then that just show you the growth that you're doing within yourself. Just by doing those small little snippets of adjustment that you're doing towards your own persona.
So do you personally have any daily habits, rituals that you do to help yourself reset or analyze that? Is it just a daily reflection? Is it writing in a journal? What do you do?
I do a lot of personal reflection. I'm very much into my thoughts. I do travel a lot now for work, and those plane ride that I'm taking to go to work, they're very, very transformative for me. I take a lot of time to think about the week that I'm about to enter if I'm going to work, but also I'm right now facing a lot of my growth that I'm going now is family. I'm a father of two young children, 1.5 and 4.5. I am trying to grow in that route. Also, the fact that because of the way I condition myself being a chef and not necessarily being the most vulnerable and not necessarily being the most open. Marriage was hard for me, to me and my wife, because I was this person that I did not aspire to be. There's a lot of reflection into this. So I'm not necessarily just growing professionally, but I'm trying to be a better husband. I'm trying to be a better father. I'm also trying to be a better family member to my family that's living in France when I have siblings that I don't necessarily have a strong relationship with. So all those things for me, they are all therapeutic. And I'm trying to go. So I do not own a journal. That is something that I've never did, but I do a lot of self-reflection and to going into my rabbit hole of thing. And then you say, okay, Frank, what happened this week? And kind of how can you assess this? What was your role you played in this? And then making amends if I have to make amends, and apologizing if I need to apologize. But at the same time, it is also my way of, in order for me to feel better, I need to feel like I'm moving forward. So I'm trying to do, and I'm trying to own up to the mistakes that I'm still making to this day, and the slip up that I say I will never do again. And then there was a slip up. So all those things allow me to assess myself and realize that my identity is my identity. And as long as I keep growing and do better every day, then I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, kids will humble you. I've got two as well. They're 9 and 6 now. And and I can tell you, kids will be brutally honest with you. And it's a good thing. I've had my kids call me out and say, "Dad, get off of your phone. Stop working." And it's a hard truth to hit when you're in the middle of something, you're trying to get things done, but then you take a step back almost existentially and you look at what's going on and you say, "I can get this work done that could probably be pushed off to later or bedtime or tomorrow, but I can't get this time back with my kids." Mm-hmm. And you talked about that identity, and it really makes you take a step back and think about what's important in life. I mean, we all strive to be our best, and we almost develop work as our only identity. But when we look back, it's how many kitchens are going to be like, "Oh, because Frank was here, my life is so much better." It can happen, right? And there are people that we touch in our lives. But at the end of the day, the world moves on. People move on with their lives. So yeah, kids are fun. I'll tell you that.
But my wife is the one that made me realize this. She just said, at some point, she told me something that I will never forget. It was like, "Frank, you've got the wrong legacy. You're trying to focus on the wrong legacy. Your kids are your legacy." And it's like, I can't believe the amount of hours you will spend to go out of your way for a stranger when your kids are right here. And that hit me hard. And it's just like, you're trying to think, like I say, your identity is work. You just connect with yourself, within yourself, because of what you do for work. And then you realize and say, "Man, touche."
That just gave me goosebumps when you just said your kids are your legacy. Like, I mean, my whole body just instantly went like straight hair up, because that is so powerful. It truly is, for those that do have kids or want to have kids, because they live on through you at the end of the day.
Yes,
what you teach them, what they develop, all the skills.
They made me realize my kids, as my daughter 4.5, she's obviously going to a lot more than my 1.5 now, but my 4.5, there's lessons that she's going through. And because of her inability to really feel all the emotion yet, we have to help her navigating all those things. I say, "Man, I'm teaching my daughter of 3-year-old to learn this, and I don't even know it myself." And I'm like, I'm 40, and I'm like, what the hell happened to me? And so you're just kind of going and say, "Did I not learn that in childhood?" And I definitely did not learn that in the kitchen. And I realized that, again, connecting the dot backwards, I also realized it's like, man, I actually never learned that skill. So I said, do yourself a favor, Frank. You're 40. It's not too late to learn that skill. So at least when your daughter is going through her own emotion, that you're not necessarily judging her for it because you don't understand, but now you can actually help her navigating it because now you just learned that skill. So in a way, they not only humbled me, but man, my kids have taught me more lessons than I've learned from any of my chefs.
Yeah, it's so true. And again, with mine being a little older, it only amplifies the older they get and they realize the world that's around them and can really communicate in a deep, complex way. Let's throw things on a little bit more on the fun side with the last few questions. You said before you love movies, especially trilogies. So if leadership itself was a trilogy, what would those three parts be?
Oh my goodness. Wow. I would say there's a part of leadership that would be into, I guess there's one. The first movie will be about being a student of hospitality, understanding exactly what role you're playing when you're on the bottom of the shelf. And you're just kind of understanding what your role is to be and how you are part of the mechanism. When you get into the second movie, I would definitely think now that you are actually part of the mechanism. You're helping moving the needle in hospitality from whatever you're bringing on the table with the skills, the knowledge, the attitude, the behavior, the leadership that you have. You're actually right in the middle of it. And I would say the third movie is, how do you actually now utilize all this wisdom, this knowledge, this experience, this expertise, this authority that you have? How do you actually translate and teach the next generation to pass it on to the next? So the goal is for you by the end of the trilogy, if you're going into a trilogy, you know, we all huge fan of the first Star Wars trilogy back in the 70s and 80s. But yet, we were demanding Star Wars in the early 2000s, which ended up becoming the newest trilogy. And so I like to think almost like you want to be finishing the last movie of your own trilogy, knowing that in 10 years or 20 years from now, someone will want to start another trilogy.
Yes, love it. All right. If a relentless growth were a dish, how would you plate it and capture what the book stands for?
If it was a dish, I would say this is a dish that you want to be enjoying every single bite of it, from the first bite to the last bite. It was intentionally created, designed, and plated in a way that you get the full holistic approach of this dish from the first to the last bite. And I can tell you that there's going to be, over time, after you read that book and you move on in your career, in 5 years from now, you will want to take that book again because you know you'll be able to extract lessons still from it.
So it sounds less of a dish and more of a multiple course meal.
Yeah, it's almost like a tasting menu. Yeah, you kind of discovering the book was written intentionally when you actually I don't give you all the answers because I think everyone's mindset is different and everyone's journey is very unique. But I'm trying to provide a blueprint that help you asking yourself the right question. Now you can just read the book, go through the book and not necessarily paying attention to the question and enjoying the ride because there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of moments in the book that's going to feel like you relate to it. But if you really pause throughout this book and you're not trying to read it in one setting and you really pause and you do the self-assessment and you ask yourself those questions honestly, you realize that you can extract 100% of that book when you approach it that way.
Yes, I love that. All right, so you've kind of hinted there might be more books in the work, right? So looking ahead, what's next for Chef Franck? A series on consulting personally? And then, you know, we talked about legacy. You know, what do you want people to remember you by and what you've left behind for the hospitality industry?
Yes, there is a future. There's a future as an author. When I came up with this idea of a book and I've defined what the book was, that made me realize there's so much more to dig into this. But, you know, I didn't want to write a 500-page book of a self-help book that did not make any sense. So I've decided to write the first book, which is technically the work you have to do within yourself. And so it is purely and only and exclusively about you versus you, against you, with you. It's all about your mindset and adopting this growth mindset. Now that I have a growth mindset, what do you do with it? Like, it doesn't necessarily fix everything. You arrive into a new job, into a new hotel, a new restaurant, and you realize that nobody think like you. Nobody approach things like you, but yet you're in charge. You're the leader. Now, how do you influence the rest of this workplace in order for the staff and the team members and the leadership to think the way you are? And I like to think that's going to be the second book. The second book is, how do you actually arrive into a workplace and transform from within this workplace by the way you think? How do you influence a workplace? So that will be the second. And then the third, I'm not sure I'm ready to articulate yet, but I like to go a little bit more in detail into my own growth, my own journey from being a father, being an entrepreneur, my childhood with its own highs and lows and all those things. So that's probably going to be something, but it's going to happen much later in my life, as I'm not yet to be ready to get into that level of vulnerability with myself. Will come with time. The question that you ask, can you repeat that again, if you don't mind, Jeff?
I was just going to say what you want people to think about your legacy, what people are going to say with what you've left behind for the food and hospitality industry.
Man, it's hard to answer. I'd like to think that while I want to be remembered, it's probably the selfish part of me that I want to be remembered for certain things. I just like to be having made an impact into some people that have helped them redirecting their journey. I'd like to almost to be an impact to someone that feel lost today and realize that it's like, oh, wow, this book actually helped me pivoting into my right journey and finding out where I wanted to go. If I've done that, regardless if I know you or not, I like to think that I've done my job. I'm a big believer that if you know something that is positively impacting people, why want to keep it for yourself? It's like the chef that I've never understood, that he has a book of recipes, but then he lives with the recipes and never share them. It's like, why? What's the point of keeping the recipe? We all gonna die and we all gonna go with it. And if you didn't pass it on, then what's the point? Like, it's just, I'm a big believer of sharing what I know. And when I've acquired a skill that could be helpful, I want to just share it with anyone that I know, just to make sure that, hey, they can say, Frank, I'm actually know it myself. I don't need it. It's great. But I might have someone that never had the courage to raise their hand and say, I actually need it. Can you share it with me? And so if I'm doing it now intentionally and it touched people a certain way, then that's good for me. That's all I need.
Yes, I love it. Chef, where do people go to find the book that's launching on October 14th? Where do they go to find more about your consulting services, about you in general, the socials, all that?
Of course. They can find me very easy now to a new website called cheffrank.com. Frank with CK at the end. So cheffrank.com, you can find me. You'll be able to find everything I stand for, my belief, my philosophy. You'll be able to navigate through a portal to get to my company, Incrementum, through cheffrank.com. And after, I'm very visible and I'm trying to be having a strong social media presence on Instagram and LinkedIn at this time. So that will be where you can find me, under Frank Desplechin on both of them.
And then for your book, same thing, just go to the website to
order
that.
If you go on my website right now, the book is exclusively pre-order on my website. So you can go. I'm working on a very, very slick packaging for the signed hardcover. I'm adding a surprise for the readers. You'll be able, if you buy the book from me, from my house, that I'm going to mail it, I will be able to sign it for you directly. You'll be able to have it signed and offering to someone else as well. So if you decide to just buy the book for someone, you can have me writing the message for you and signing it. And so a pretty sleek packaging. So right now it's exclusively available on my website, cheffrank.com, pre-order. And then once it comes out on October 14, I'll make sure to mail it myself to you.
Awesome. I'll have to definitely pick up a copy. Sounds right up my alley. I think our mindsets are quite aligned, and I think I could learn quite a few things from your past and your present and probably your future. So I look forward to future books, future workings that you're going to do. So thank you again for just taking the time to jump on today. And we'll put all this information down in the show notes so you can find Chef Franck very easily. Any last words?
See you at work.
Love it. All right, guys. Until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.